This morning, we're going to be reviewing again the Minneapolis Veterans Home and the veterans' homes in general. And we're going to begin by looking at some of the financial issues that have been a problem in the past. And we're going to start with the Office of Legislative Auditors report. We have Cecile with us and Mike Hastings. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having us here today. I'm Cecile Ferkel. I'm the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Financial Audit Division within the Legislative Auditor's Office. Before we get into the report about the Minneapolis Vets Home, I'd like to just give you a brief overview of the Legislative Auditor's Office and the Financial Audit Division, what we do. Much of our time during the year is spent auditing the state's financial statements. We recently concluded that. When we're done with that, we have a few other routine audits that we do, regularly scheduled audits, including a few more financial statements, but we do spend a fair amount of the year going into state agencies that we determine to be in need of audit work and doing internal control and compliance audits. So we go into those entities and we look at their controls, their internal controls over their financial processes, and we look at how well they've complied with financially related statutory provisions. It was that type of an audit that we did at the Minneapolis Vets Home. So I'd like to turn it over now to Mike Hastings to talk about the results of our audit work.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Michael Hastings, and I was the audit manager responsible for actually all three of these Veterans Home reports that you have in front of you. I would like to take just a brief moment and introduce and recognize Laura Peterson from our staff. Laura, if you could just stand. Laura was the audit supervisor who led the team of auditors at the audit of Minneapolis and at the Veterans Home Board. As you know, Minneapolis Veterans Home is the largest facility of the five Veterans Home with approximately 400 residents, a budget of over $35 million, and approximately 600 employees. It's a large entity. This was an internal control and compliance audit. It was a regularly scheduled audit as part of our practice of going to entities within the state. It covered the fiscal year 2005, 2006, and 2007. While we were there during April and May approximately of 2008, we were looking at the controls that were in place at that point in time. We did a fairly comprehensive review of a number of financial cycles and operations at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We reviewed the cost of care process. We reviewed the resident accounts. We reviewed the gifts and donations, looked at payroll and administrative expenditures, including their processes for procurement and for managing their fixed assets. Again, as Cecile mentioned, our focus was on financial-related matters of internal controls and compliance. We were not looking at the care issues. The last time we had visited Minneapolis Veterans Home was in July of 2005 and looked at fiscal years 2, 3, and 4. And at that time, we had issued a report that had eight prior audit recommendations. During the period of our current audit scope, was a period of great change, a lot of healthcare concerns, and other challenges at Minneapolis. There was a turnover of many administrators, turnover in the financial management staff, and they had staffing vacancies in a number of other areas throughout the home. The Department of Health was conducting inspections and doing monitoring work. Federal investigators were in doing their work. There were outside consultants to help with the administration of the home as well. And this ultimately led to the governor's executive order to transfer the oversight of the Veterans Home from the Veterans Home Board to the Department of Veterans Affairs. However, this change did not excuse the Minneapolis Veterans Home of its fiscal management responsibilities. The report that you have before you on the Minneapolis Veterans Home is a very critical report. It has very serious financial management concerns and internal control deficiencies. There are 18 findings and numerous recommendations in that report. And again, concerning is that from that prior audit report where there were eight findings, six of those findings were not implemented by the home. And we repeated those findings in the current report. At the conclusion of our work, we met with Commissioner Dyrud, Deputy Commissioner Acevedo, the new full-time administrator at the home, Judy Kirky Coleman, and with the business manager, Ed Anderson. And they concurred with all the findings in the report, as you can see from the response that is attached after our comments in our audit report. They were cooperative throughout the audit process. And again, as we went to these various homes and entities, we did treat Minneapolis fairly and consistently in our audit approach. We used the same criteria and the same procedures and looked at the same programs that we did at Fergus Falls at our audit there. Most importantly in the Minneapolis Veterans Home report is finding number one. This is a very cross-cutting finding. And again, it just demonstrates that the issues at the Minneapolis home were not strictly isolated just to the receipt area or just to travel expenditures, but we found errors and deficiencies across the organization, a number of the areas that we looked at. And we ultimately came to the conclusion that the Minneapolis Veterans Home did not fulfill its financial management responsibilities to control financial activities and to ensure that compliance with laws and regulations was being upheld. And these are very concerning conclusions. There were serious internal control deficiencies throughout the organization. There was a lack of administrative oversight, which led to an unacceptable level of financial management. The financial records lacked integrity. There were errors. There was missing documentation. There was incomplete reconciliations. This lack of an overall fundamental internal controls created an operating environment where there certainly was a high risk of errors and numerous opportunities for fraud. While we did not identify any specific instances of fraud, there certainly were numerous red flags that we were concerned about and that we did additional testing on. But in the end, whether fraud had occurred or not, the control system was so weak that we just could not tell. I talked about fundamental internal control deficiencies. Some of these relate to the safeguarding of assets. This is finding number two, starting on page 11 of that report. They had receipts where they collected, the cashier's office was unsecured, untimely deposits, employees taking the daily deposits to the bank, oftentimes $300,000, too many people having check signing authority for their accounts. Another fundamental internal control was not reconciling their internal accounting systems. They have standalone systems, subsystems for accounts receivable, resident accounts, and gifts and donations. They were not reconciling these accounts completely to bank statements or to the state's accounting system. That is a repeat finding. Finding number four is also a repeat finding. That was addressing not restricting access to these systems or to the state's accounting system, or having too many people with incompatible access, allowing them to have total control over a single processing system. And again, there was a lack of documentation. Numerous areas where we found where there wasn't documentation to support a transaction, there wasn't evidence of bids, there was missing personnel file. So again, just a lack of attention to the documentation issues. So that kind of brought us to that overall conclusion. A couple other areas that I would just like to highlight for you this morning relate to the payroll area. Again, the Veterans Home uses a time track system. It's kind of a separate system to account for the time of the employees, and then that interfaces with the state's payroll system. But again, there was a lack of evidence of review for the hours that the employees had worked. The system did not allow a historical record of that activity. And rather than having individual supervisors sign off on employees' timesheets, often that was done under a mass approval process where a supervisor, a nursing supervisor, would just sign off the whole batch rather than individual supervisors. Again, that payroll was a repeat finding from that prior audit. Most concerning in the payroll area was the issue of overtime. Minneapolis Veterans Home incurred approximately $2 million of overtime each year. Some employees actually earned more in overtime than their regular salary. There was no authorization, no verification of that overtime. We did some additional testing and found that some employees actually worked 45 to 60 hours of overtime in every pay period. Again, we're not talking about a week or a month, but consistently worked that level of overtime. And many of these were nursing employees. And so we question again, while we were not looking at the care, but again, that probably had an impact on the care. And we just questioned whether that was physically possible to work that many hours. We certainly didn't feel that it was reasonable. And so again, we questioned and doubted if those employees actually worked the hours or if they were working the system. Other key issues, Madam Chair, that we addressed and identified in the report, finding 9 and 10, we talk about fixed assets and about inventory control. The pharmacy lacks separation of duties. They weren't keeping track of the non-pharmaceutical, non-controlled medications and drugs that they had. There was unsettled cash advances from the gift and donation account. Again, this is where an employee would take a group of residents on an activity. They would advance them, say, $1,000 for the cost of that activity. But there wasn't an accountability on the backside of that transaction. There wasn't a receipt to support the expenses that they had incurred, or there wasn't a return of cash. Over fiscal year 2007, there was approximately $12,000 of unaccounted receipts or returned cash that the home actually had worked through some analysis and tried to identify. We also found errors in the cost of care calculation. While these were not significant errors from a material standpoint, again, it just back to the pension for detail, looking at making sure that they're using the appropriate allowable costs in that calculation. And it affected only those residents that were paying the maximum amount, but there were errors in that calculation. And again, that was a repeat finding. There was also a number of thefts that occurred at the Minneapolis Veterans Home while we were on site, actually, and in the area that we were working in. So that was concerning. Assets were disturbed. Some equipment was taken. Again, just to remind the Veterans Home of their report, of their responsibility to report those incidences to the Legislative Auditor's Office and to the local law enforcement authorities. Madam Chair, that kind of concludes my comments related to the Minneapolis Veterans Home report. If you'd like, I could take questions related to that report now or just briefly summarize the other two reports.
Why don't we take questions on this report and then we'll move on. You said there were thefts while you were there doing the audit. How much money was taken?
Madam Chair, I think that would be most appropriately addressed by the Veterans Home staff. To my knowledge, it was more assets and violation of space and some disturbance of some records as opposed to actual cash that was missing.
You said there was equipment taken also?
Madam Chair, that is my understanding from they did report the first incident to us. That incident happened in July, I believe, of 2008.
In regard to the unmanaged overtime, when you do audits of this type, what do you normally expect to see in regard to overtime costs?
Madam Chair and members, when we analyze the overall payroll population that we obtain from the state's warehouse and from the facility's records, we would expect to see pre-approval for overtime in compliance with the state's overtime rules. And again, we would expect to see whether there was a special project that they were related to. And again, we wouldn't expect to see this level of overtime continue over such a long period of time.
And so again, when you audit other facilities of this nature, what amount of overtime do you see in relationship to the level of staffing?
Madam Chair and members, again, I think that's kind of a judgment call in the eye of the auditor, but As we looked here, overtime was about $2 million out of the $29 million. So it was that number in and of itself was significant. We also had a number of individual employees, and so we started to break that down to see how many employees were actually receiving overtime. Was it certain employees in a certain division that was receiving the overtime? How much overtime on an individual basis made up that total? And so once we start to look at that, then we start to look for the authorizations and the approvals.
Yes. Madam Chair, members, if I could direct you to, in our report on page 19 and on page 20, we do have a couple of tables because the overtime was so significant that we compared it to the overtime levels at the other state veterans' homes. Mm-hmm. That's the table on page 19. And on page 20, we then... We also compared it in that table to the state-operated services by the Department of Human Services and the overtime.
And that's not necessarily a good place to compare either, but...
Right, right. And in the table on page 20, Madam Chair, we also compared the Minneapolis Vets Home specifically to the Anoka Regional Treatment Center because we wanted to compare two metro facilities to each other. And in both of those comparisons, we found that the Minneapolis Veterans Home overtime rate was higher than what we saw in those other institutions.
And it looks like it's higher by more than twice.
Not quite.
Are there other questions? Yes, Senator?
Madam Chair, no questions today. Mr. Hessing and Ferkel. Ms. Ferkel, we're in the Ag and Veterans Affairs Committee, which I serve on, and I was very happy with the thoroughness of your report, and you left before I could thank you publicly there, so I want to just say this morning that I, for one, this senator is very appreciative of this report because I think it's good for the not only good for the legislature but the taxpayers, and I just want to thank you for your thoroughness of the report. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Senator Coring.
Other questions? Hey, then why don't you go on?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in addition to the audit report for the Minneapolis Veterans Home, we also did an audit of the Veterans Home at Fergus Falls. And again, you'll be pleased to hear in this case that we issued a report for the Fergus Falls Veterans Home that did not have any findings or recommendations in that report. Again, we had some of the same audit staff that we used at the Minneapolis home that participated in that audit. We followed the same procedures, followed the same programs, held them to the same criteria. Some of the differences, I guess, that we saw or identified was, again, a very strong and stable leadership team at the Fergus Falls Veterans Home and also a real strong penchant for details. And, again, maybe there were some opportunities for some best practices. Again, they're different homes, different sizes and things, and we understand that. But, again, there's probably some opportunities for some best practices of what's being done and how they're accomplishing at one home versus the other. So, again, we're pleased to report that the Fergus Falls report did not have any findings or recommendations. We also did an audit of the Minneapolis Veterans Home Board. We kind of conducted this as a closeout audit during the period actually, a fiscal year 5 to the end of fiscal year 08 to capture all of the financial activity of the former Veterans Home Board before it transferred its responsibilities to the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Veterans Home Board had an annual budget of approximately $1.5 million to $2 million, provided oversight to the five homes. And our conclusion on that report, Madam Chair, was that the board generally recorded financial activities and complied with legal provisions. We did have four findings, and we addressed them to the Department of Veterans Affairs to follow up on those. There was a finding related to some travel expenditures of one of the board members. Question about some overtime pay of one of the employees at the board. Again, there was a lack of documentation on an isolated basis. And then also we questioned the fixed asset records of the board in particular as it transferred those assets and those items to the Department of Veterans Affairs to be sure that they were getting a complete accountability of that activity. But again, we concluded that the board generally recorded their financial activities and complied with legal provisions. Thank you.
Are there questions on this portion? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I think that it's appropriate that we applaud the Fergus Falls Veterans Home for their very positive financial report. Frankly, I think that it gives us some sense of hope because we know that this is possible. We know that it is possible to have an establishment to serve our veterans in this fashion, and it continues to be a source of frustration that we seemingly have some facilities who are clearly stellar in this and some that continue to struggle. But this does give us some hope. So kudos to Fergus Falls. I think that's Senator Scogin's district. It is Senator Scogin's. And although he's not here today, I know he's very proud of that facility.
Other questions? Senator?
I would like to ask you just a general question. I noticed that the audit objectives and scope are the same between these two audits, and in your conclusions you talk about these as being reacting to those audit objectives specifically, but that it's within the scope of those. How did you determine which programs to audit? And what other programs might you audit that would be important for us in the future to take a look at?
Madam Chair and Senator Schron, we look at the financial population of an entity in whole, and we are planning our audit to determine what areas we want to look at. Is it important to look at the areas that are most material from a financial aspect? Are there other activities within an organization that might provide some additional risk to that entity that we would want to look at? Again, we feel that we did a fairly comprehensive look at these entities. Possibly there was a canteen operation maybe that we did not look at. But other than that, I think we did a fairly comprehensive review of the operations and activities at both of these homes.
Madam Chair and Senator,
yes.
Also, if I could add, and we do, our first cut is kind of a financial look. What's material dollar-wise? But then we do also say what's really significant here from some other perspective, and something like the resident accounts or the gift money that's donated to an institution and intended to be used for the benefit of the people at the home. That's also an aspect that would elevate an area in our review. Another area might also be employee travel, where that has been something that, you know, kind of, you know, gets easily overlooked within an organization's financial operations and tends to be an area that an employee might take advantage of. So we look at the big things. We look at payroll, of course, and fixed assets and those big areas, but we also do take a different perspective and look at some of the higher risk and more important from a resident standpoint areas as well.
Interesting. Other questions? If not, thank you very much. We have Ed Anderson, who's a business manager at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. Nick. Well, I guess we don't quite have the agenda right here then.
Um, Madam Chair, my name is Clark Dyrud. I'm Commissioner from Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'd like to make some opening comments about the four topics we'll be talking about today, and then the staff will be moving through them. The four issues, of course, being the OLA report that you've just heard, overall care issues at the Minneapolis home, Medicare, Medicaid, the possibility for receiving that at the Minneapolis home, and the upcoming Department of Justice CRIPA report. And I just want to make some opening comments about, for a beginning, the OLA report. This is, I'm just quite, I guess angry is the best word to say for this. There is no excuse for many of these findings. This report goes from prior to 2005 up until 2007, November, when the change of governance took place. We were aware that there were issues. We were just not aware of the depth of them. There is no excuse, as I said. The report, the response to the OLA in 2005, we did find that was dated less than a month before there were the 30 correction orders that hit in the paper in August of 2005. I don't know what happened to the intent to deal with OLA's issues. None of those people are still here, and obviously the issues were. When we started last November, we started with new staff. We started looking at issues. We welcomed the OLA report to see the extent. What were the issues? And we found out. We have, over the past year, worked very diligently on this, as we have on the other issues. I am very confident that the issues have been dealt with, but there is no way that we have sustainability at this time. So I'm not going to sit here and give you guarantees that you have heard for many years from many different people. I have heard the same. At this point, we do not have any trust built up. Trust is something that is earned with time. And so I will say that we believe that all of the issues have been dealt with appropriately. Systems are in place. And now time will have to bear that out. As to the care issues, we are quite happy with the progress that has been made there. We were free of all corrections from the Department of Health as of last June. Our Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo started just about a year ago, a year and a week or so, and that's the time at which Jill Smith, our Director of Nurses, started. One of the things that was real obvious, there was no in-service training anymore. There were no nurse supervisors. Those type of issues have been dealt with. We have ongoing monitoring from Pathways, who has a contract with the Department of Health. And those, they are on site, and those are ongoing reports, which have been generally quite positive. And I would hope that Madam Chair, that you would ask for an update from the Department of Health compliance area. I think we are making great improvement there. But again, sustainability is what we are after here. As far as Medicare, Medicaid, you will get some information on that. One piece of information that I think tends to get overlooked is prior to 2002, that there was not an option. The choice for state veterans home was either a VA per diem or Medicare, Medicaid. So there was not an option. That the federal guidelines were changed in 2002. So we have a quite a large number of employees, a large organization that is totally unfamiliar with what would be necessary for that. And as we have testified in a couple times within the last year, it's something we are certainly looking at, which is very complex, and you will get an update on that. The last issue is the Department of Justice upcoming CRIPA investigation, which we reported on last October. The Department of Justice started looking at the homes probably 2005, 2006, when there was a great deal of publicity. And this has developed from that point forward. They will be coming on site February 2nd, 3rd, something on that order. But I just wanted to give a brief overview, and I would, unless there are specific questions right now, I would like to call our Deputy Commissioner, Gail Acevedo, who will be here as we proceed with the rest of the testimony.
Commissioner, I just have one question. One of the things that you said, I think maybe needs a little clarification. You said that the financial sustainability and the integrity of the financial stability of the organization is not necessarily sustainable. Did you mean you don't know if it will be sustainable or you don't believe it is sustainable?
Madam Chair, what I meant to say is it very much is sustainable. We think the systems are in place. We have new people. We have new systems. What I was trying to say is we think the issues dealt with in that report have been put in place to deal with all the issues, but we won't know that until the sustainability. In other words, 6 months down the road, are things still going well? I'm very confident they are, but what I was trying to say is, given the history of everything you have heard over time from the home, I cannot assume that you will trust what I say as far as the future. We have to earn that trust.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
I think I'm extracting from that what has to be put in place besides the initial response is a redundancy or a sustainability, that the system will stay engaged in a system of practices that have multiple checks on them for internal controls, and that's what is yet to be seen, whether or not you can say we've done this. Now it's will it be applied and will it be sustained, and are there multiple redundancies in the system to keep the system active? And I was hoping to hear about that from Ed Anderson and whether or not I wondered if part of the problem was the people in the positions to do this not having the background or the certainly I would not be the person to take on this task with my background, but is the right person there to make certain that those regulatory processes are there and are in constant check?
Well, Senator Sharon, you know, it's possible that it was a matter of not having the right people, but, you know, that's what we always hear. Every time something goes wrong out there, oh, well, we didn't have the right people. And in some cases, they've gone through three, four, five people. And so, you know, it was more than not having the right people. It wasn't having the right procedures as well.
And the redundancy, which by that I mean that there is not just a system, but that there's a process in place to make sure that the system is actually occurring and sustained.
Yes. Deputy Commissioner.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Gilbert Acevedo, Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Health Care. As your agenda shows, Mr. Anderson will address the issues concerning the legislative audit report. Upon his conclusion, I also have a few comments to make about the legislative audit report.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ed Anderson, and I've been the business manager at Minneapolis for the past 2 years. We weren't totally surprised by this audit report. We had done quite a bit of our own pre-audit work in anticipation of the Legislative Auditor's Office, and we had identified many of the same situations and problems that had occurred previously. We had begun to implement procedures and processes to address these issues, but it fell out of the scope of the audit time period. As we worked through the audit process, we had the Legislative Auditor's team review our processes and our procedures that we were implementing, and they concurred that we were moving in the right direction. With regard to sustainability, we do have to demonstrate a period of time that once those processes and procedures are in place that we can sustain for the long term, not just repair them for a 1 month or a 6 month time frame. They have to be sustained for the long term. And we have to be able to demonstrate that when the legislative auditor returns in a 2 to 3 year time period. With regards to finding number one, since the report was issued, or since the audit was concluded in July, we have added a significant number of senior members to the administrative staff. And we have a response to that on page 33. All of the discrepancies that were identified in the audit, you'll find our responses there. But since the conclusion of the audit, we've added a permanent administrator, an assistant administrator that brings over 30 years of healthcare background and experience from the Department of Health, a new quality director, and we have replaced those people that were incapable of performing their jobs in other capacities. I have no other formal prepared remarks, but I would open up myself to any questions you might have with regards to overtime. If you have some questions about overtime, I can maybe address some of those.
Well, since you say the recommendations are being followed, I assume that overtime is being pre-approved now?
Overtime is being pre-approved. We implemented those changes, again, in fiscal year 8, which was out of the scope of the audit, and we've implemented a number of processes to monitor and track overtime. Kind of interesting what we found as we continued to drill down on this overtime issue is that overtime is not the only thing that's included in the expenditure category. You know, also included in there is holiday pay. Also included in there are, as contract settlements occur and overtime had been incurred in previous fiscal years, we ended up having to pay that overtime in the current fiscal years. So there's a number of issues aside just from people working overtime. The other thing we've done is to identify a number of vacant positions that had a huge impact on the nursing budget, and we've addressed filling those positions with adequate staff. We're not quite there yet. We're having some challenges in filling positions in the LPN category, but we are addressing them and making the changes required. We're not seeing a significant drop in our overtime for this current fiscal year. However, it looks like potentially $500,000 savings from the prior years.
Do you know how long I've been asking the Minneapolis Veterans Home to fill vacant positions so that they could reduce their overtime?
Madam Chair, the past 2 years...
Years.
Yes, Madam Chair.
So if overtime is being approved ahead of time, how much overtime is being approved at the Minneapolis Home per month?
Approximately $50,000 per pay period, so roughly $100,000 a month. And that occurs primarily in the nursing categories.
And what do you anticipate the overtime would be if all the positions were filled?
I have an idealistic number. It may not be realistic, but I would say approximately, at our current rate, $1.8 million a year.
And one of the recommendations in the auditor's report was that you should go back and look at overtime that had been approved previously as to whether it realistically could have been for services rendered. And have you done that?
Madam Chair, many of those people are no longer with us.
I don't think that really matters. I mean, if they were working there and received pay that was inappropriate, it still should be pursued.
Madam Chair, we'll take that under consideration.
Okay. Mr. Godfrey has a question for you.
Madam Chair, members, I'm not sure if Mr. Anderson misspoke or perhaps I didn't quite understand his number, but in terms of the $1.8 million that would be under the ideal scenario with the everyone hired for those vacant positions, would exceed the what I think would be $1.3 million that you'd be paying now if you're paying $100,000 a pay period.
Madam Chair, Mr. Godfrey, that $100,000 a month varies depending on as holidays fall. For example, during the Thanksgiving holiday, where there's two holidays paid during that particular time period, we paid just for that pay period alone was about $135,000 in overtime costs.
Mr. Godfrey.
Madam Chair, members, and Mr. Anderson, I'm just, in that case then, the $100,000 a month or the $50,000 a pay period doesn't sound like it's a currently, I mean, like an actual averaged number over the course of an entire fiscal year. Is that correct? It's a more recent average for the last month or something to that effect?
Madam Chair, Mr. Godfrey, that's correct. Those are as of the most recent pay periods that I've had an opportunity to review. On average, I could certainly get you a better number.
We'd appreciate that. Were there any, apparently there were supervisors as well as line staff that were claiming overtime payments? Has that been reviewed?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is being reviewed.
And is there are you pre-approving that overtime as well?
Madam Chair, we identified a number of issues with our supervisory and managerial personnel as far as how time in general and overtime specifically was getting approved. We've since pushed that delegation of responsibility back to the appropriate levels, and we're insisting that they do review the timesheets and the overtime sheets as part of our implemented practices.
And are there any supervisors in the past that have been claiming overtime that may not have been, maybe shouldn't have been getting it?
Madam Chair, that's very possible, although I don't know specifically that was occurring. I know that we do have some supervisors that are paid overtime.
So is that being reviewed, the past overtime that's been paid?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've since implemented a policy and a procedure where before any exempt employee, for example, is approved for overtime or compensation time, has to be approved by the administrator and myself.
Senator Berglund?
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. How is each unit or each system that's supervised by a nurse or a supervising person responsible? Are their responsibilities, besides approving overtime, are they given responsibility for an overall budget for their unit that they have to operate within to give them a sense of engagement in cost containment?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, they're not. There's a specific budget assigned to each floor of the facility and each building of the facility. It's specifically more to the director of nursing that she holds her supervisors and managers accountable for administering that budget. I review her budget with her on a quarterly basis and make adjustments as needed. There is certainly an expectation of accountability of all of our supervisors and managers. And again, as on a quarterly basis, I review those budgets with those managers. With regards to overtime, they receive a report at the end of each pay period identifying who's worked overtime, with the expectation that they review those overtime expenditures and challenge anybody that may have been paid inappropriately. In addition to that, I do another report on a biweekly basis that identifies those people that were paid more than 30 hours of overtime. Our expectations eventually will get down to no more than 20 hours per pay period. However, given our current staffing levels, we're at about 30 hours as a threshold. And that report is also sent to all the supervisors and managers for their review as well for appropriateness.
Well, thank you. Just a follow-up, Senator Berglund. I just know that besides just authorizing overtime or reviewing a budget, is there an expectation? I mean, we've talked about sort of multiple system changes at this home in order to improve not only this budgetary issue but also staffing levels and filling positions. So that if you have a nursing supervisor overseeing a budgetary process and there's a trend occurring where a number of legitimate overtime expenditures are being made, but there's a trend line, is that at that level rather than at a high level? Is there problem solving? Is there not only reporting up, but responsibility for engagement in problem solving for those problems within that unit?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, yes, there is. We meet on a daily basis, the administrator, the director of nursing, the nurse scheduling supervisor, and myself, generally about a 20-minute meeting, but we identify and try to review all of the activity that's occurring that may be driving overtime costs. Again, vacant positions at the LPN level, vacant positions in general. We look at our agency usage. And how that's being affected. We can see from our hiring activity that agency utilization has dropped dramatically in this past fiscal year. We do have other nursing activity reports that we review after the end of each pay period, and then we can see what the trend analysis is. And if you'd like, I could prepare any of those reports for you and provide them for your information.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I'm just I'm wondering if the systems are putting in place so that there can be corrections at the level where corrections can be made immediately rather than something occurring over a long period of time and review it after 2-year period of time. So there's simply reporting and not an responsibility for action. Then you're sustaining a problem for a long period of time before it gets picked up.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, we do have as a result of this particular audit, we have incorporated a goal to achieve financial integrity in our strategic plan. That strategic plan is viewed by the senior leadership of the facility and also of the Veterans Affairs Department. As a oversight provision in that strategic plan, it is my responsibility to report on a quarterly basis to our Quality Assurance Council. And at that time, review what's outstanding or remaining on this particular audit report. In addition, we also report to Minnesota Management and Budget, used to be the Department of Finance, on a quarterly basis as far as the status and outcome of this particular report. So I hope that answers your question. We've got a significant amount of oversight incorporated into our processes, and my feeling is that will help us sustain these changes for the long term.
You've said that you're having difficulty filling LPN positions. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Madam Chair, I'm not totally familiar with the nursing industry. Possibly Jill Smith may be able to address that better.
But we can hold that question until she comes up then. Other questions in regard to the legislative auditor's report. One of the things that I found also very disturbing is that the home was not accurately calculating the cost of care rate by payer. And since there are a number of payers at the home, this is disturbing if anyone should come in and audit for that and find that there were overpayments being made. Can you tell us what's being done to make sure that is not continuing in the future?
Sure. Madam Chair, some of the errors that were found in the cost of care calculation included the number of days in the calculation when in fiscal year 5 there was a leap year. The calculation was calculated during fiscal year 4, but it didn't go into effect until the beginning of fiscal year 5. There was They had not taken into account leap year, which occurred in February of 2004, so it added one additional day to the calculation. A couple of the other errors that were found were the notification letter that goes out to the residents was off a few cents one way or another. As Mr. Hassing said, these were not significant errors. However, they were repeat findings from previous audits. To resolve that situation, it will now be the responsibility of myself and the assistant business manager to calculate that cost of care independently and then reconcile or resolve any issues.
Another area that was a repeat finding or violation was mismanagement of resident funds. Is anything being done to make sure that the resident funds are more accurately being handled?
Madam Chair, yes, in answer to your question. We are also looking at a new system that will interface, as opposed to a standalone system that will interface with our Momentum, our electronic medical record keeping system, as a possibility to resolve any additional errors.
Have there been resident funds that are missing that have to be returned to the residents by the home?
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge. As far as we can determine at this point, all the residents' funds have been accounted for and interest has been applied appropriately.
And has there been an inventory made of all of the equipment?
Yes, Madam Chair, there has. We've also engaged with the firm to audit or do an inventory for our non-pharmaceuticals in the pharmacy, and that will be prepared every 6 months, that particular inventory audit.
And speaking of pharmacy, are the medications now properly secured, and is access only available to proper personnel?
Madam Chair, I can't address that specifically, but to the best of my knowledge, they've always have been secured properly. In fact, we just recently purchased some new medication carts that will make it possible that they become more secure. They'll be attached to the wall in the hallway and requires a access code in order to open them.
Well, there was a finding here regarding the pharmacy. Page 25. Holmes Pharmacy did not adequately manage its non-controlled prescription drugs or other pharmaceutical supplies.
Yes, Madam Chair. We found that there had been a period of at least 14 years where an inventory had not been completed of non-controlled pharmaceutical supplies. And that's why the company was engaged to come in and complete that inventory. Controlled substances are inventoried on a monthly basis.
Are there other questions? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel as if we continue to sort of dance around what the root cause here is. And a suggestion that by lowering your overtime cost by $500,000, while one could argue that that's in the right direction, we're talking about a $2 million expense. And I think, frankly, that the state is doing everything it can to help you in this, in that we have among the highest unemployment rate that we have ever had. So having said that, how is it that I'm feeling like it's an accepted norm that if our overtime is only 70 hours, you know, if our employees are only working 70 hours in a week, then that's an improvement and that's better. The connection between your overtime expenditures and your patient care, I would suggest to you, is a direct correlation. And so long as we continue to discuss this in a financial silo and in a patient care silo, I think we're going to have a hard time getting to the bottom of this.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, I would like to, again, to defer that to Jill Smith, our Director of Nursing and Assistant Administrator, who could probably talk more proficiently about patient care, resident care, acuity level, and what might be driving some of those overtime costs associated with that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. Anderson, my point, again, is that I think collectively that discussion needs to take place within your organization. And if there was ever a time when the staffing issues could be addressed, I would think that it would be now. And frankly, in your comments, I have not, and in looking at the report in terms of your response, you are reviewing overtime and you are reporting this and having conversations about this on a regular basis. I'm suggesting to you what is missing is that we are not talking about recognizing or having conversations about what the root cause here is. You're, in fact, it appears, trying to manage this fire. And I'm just suggesting that more appropriately we need to focus on the root cause.
Are there other questions about the auditor's report?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Acevedo, I just wanted to make a couple comments to add to what Mr. Anderson had mentioned. One of the things that we're doing as an agency, as a department, we're also having meetings with the business managers. All of the business managers of all the homes are meeting on a regular basis to discuss best practices, and that's being led by our financial director, Ms. Sherry Kromschroeder. In a case where Fergus Falls has a good audit or no findings, they have obviously good systems in place. So what we're doing is we're sharing best practices. When it comes to cost of care, the business managers are looking at ways to standardize the sorts across the board. Another thing that we're doing is that we're looking to reinstitute the internal audits by the department. The Veterans Home Board had an internal audit system that was discontinued at some point. With that, we'll be looking at all the homes, and I mean all the homes. Even though Fergus Falls may have had a good audit this time, we want to make sure that if there's anything there that could be found or things that are not being done, we want to continue to look. Along with the audit, we want to add a piece to the audit, is that if things are found, then we need to bring it up to this committee and start looking at best practices and do an education and develop policies and procedures as needed. So we're moving along. We're trying to get as many systems in place to avoid this from happening in the future.
Assistant Commissioner, I know that we're going to be having a discussion about the filling of vacancies when the Director of Nursing, Jill Smith, comes up, but I do believe it's a little above her pay grade to be talking about overhiring. And I have recommended to the Minneapolis home on several occasions because, you know, the story we always hear is the length of time it takes to fill vacancies. And so I have suggested to them on several occasions that they be involved in those areas where they know they have quite a bit of turnover of overhiring so that they always have vacancies filled. And if you always have vacancies filled, then you shouldn't really need overtime. And so I mentioned that to you because I don't think the Director of Nursing is the one that should be responsible for making that kind of a request to the Department of Employee Relations.
Yes, ma'am.
Has there been any discussion of that since you came on board?
Madam Chair, yes, there has. With the administrator that we just hired, with our senior director for healthcare. We've been discussing that. One of the things that we found in our HR process is that we have systems that needed to be updated and corrected. There was really, it was taking an incredible amount of time that it shouldn't have to hire staff. So we now have a position that we're hiring to because we have a member that's going to retire, but we have a qualified person in our HR department that is streamlining the HR process.
And does that have anything to do with what I just asked you?
Yes, ma'am. I feel that it
Explain
does.
Explain that to me then.
Sure. Madam Chair, in hiring our staff and being able to recruit and being able to sustain our retention rates at the home is a function of nursing, administration, and our HR department. And it's a chain, and the different links link together. We had a weak link in our HR department. So as nursing was requesting additional people to be hired and to advertise for new nursing positions in the HR department, that's where the system fell apart.
And so you believe that there is no need to be overhiring if you're filling vacancies in a timely fashion? And that in the future you believe you will be filling vacancies in a timely fashion?
I do feel we'll be filling vacancies in a timely fashion. I do agree that you need to be overhiring at times. But again, we have to, Ms. Smith will speak to the difficulties they're experiencing with the licensed practical nurses. Hiring and retaining staff at the home gets to be a little bit of a challenge at times, and I would like to defer that to Ms. Smith, who can speak to exactly the day-to-day operations. I can give you some assumptions as to why I feel some of the nursing staff don't stay at the veterans' home, but our turnover rate has dropped considerably.
You know, this is a problem that I've always had difficulty understanding because when I deal with other areas of long-term care in the human services budget, there is almost no place where employees working in long-term care get pensions. And there are fewer and fewer places where employees working in long-term care get health care benefits. And so your employees get both. So I have difficulty understanding why there is so much difficulty in hiring and retaining. I really have a hard time understanding. I realize the Minneapolis home is, you know, in the metropolitan area, in the past especially, has had the luxury of, I mean, has had the disadvantage of recruiting from a large labor pool, and there are a lot of choices. People maybe don't have as many choices where they work in some of the smaller communities in rural Minnesota. But nevertheless, when you have two benefits you can offer people that most other employers are not going to be able to offer, I don't understand it. Well, anything else, gentlemen?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Anderson, keep up your good work. We're counting on you. Ms. Smith, do you want to come up?
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm here today to talk about resident care at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. As was mentioned earlier, our Department of Health survey held in July, all our care issues were found corrected, and I'm very pleased to report that. Our DVA survey was conducted December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of 2008. As of today, we do not have the official results from that survey back yet. However, they did leave us with some good comments that I'd like to share. Overall, they felt that the clinical care was very good, that we used our behavioral health services department well. Activities were many. When they interviewed the residents, one of the words the residents used, one of the words that the surveyor used was the residents were shining. And I went, shining, what does that mean? That the residents were very positive when they specifically asked them if there was anything that could be improved. The residents say it already feels like home. This is my home. The nonverbal residents that the surveyor interviewed, she could tell, even though they couldn't verbalize their thoughts, that by their actions and expressions that they were very well cared for as well. They observed staff treating residents with respect. The families that the surveyors were interviewed were all satisfied. They observed no rough handling. They said they were very positive about the changes that they felt were occurring at the facility, that the administration was very supportive. Our weight loss, pressure ulcer documentation was good. They were part of our clinical rounds, care conferences, and felt that we had done a nice job of identifying significant changes in a particular resident, that our minimum data set was done timely, and that we took a comprehensive approach to our care using that data set and making the care plans individualized. So they were very pleased with those things. Since they have been here, we are updating our emergency response plan to our nurse stat call. We're looking at pain management and the documentation of that, and some medication management education. Our pathways monitor that's been in place, we work with them, so I think of them more of as a partner, in that we get a weekly report with the focus on our high-risk resident care issues. Pathways completed a mock survey in December. Again, I don't have the official results back from them. However, some of the things that they had to tell us were that our care issues were, they didn't find a whole lot, that our residents looked good. The toileting and repositioning was done timely. From a nutrition hydration standpoint, any significant weight loss that was happening was being addressed. They found no medication errors during their survey. Pain management, they observed residents getting pain controlled and addressed in an effective manner. Our hospice care plans were integrated into the plan of care. Our behavioral interventions were also integrated in the plan of care. Coumadin tracking was in place. They did give us some areas of documentation to look at, of which we are currently doing with that piece. Some of the quality improvement projects that we are doing, and I just listed a few of them to let you know. We use EQIP for quality. It's a program that allows us to use our minimum data set information, and we can track our own individual performance as well as the peer veterans' performance against a national rate through the system. So with that being said, we can look on a month-to-month or even a day-to-day basis at this information to determine where are we at, are there some things that we need to look at improving, and how do we rate ourselves, how do we rate against the peer veterans facilities, and how do we rate nationally. So with that in mind, falls prevention. I'd like to say falls will never happen, but they indeed do happen. And so we wanted to take a look at this because our facility rater, the rate at Minneapolis Veterans Home, was 20.5 for 2008. Our peer
and
veterans.
What does 20.5 mean?
It's a rate established by the benchmarking company, and it compares us then to the rate against other veterans communities and against nursing facilities at a national rate. And so our peer veterans rate was 12.8, and the national community rate. National community rate was 19.8. Therefore, our rate was a little bit higher. So we have been working on a falls prevention program. Some of the things that we've done to decrease the number of falls for a resident, staff education, creating awareness. We've done a couple of skills fairs. We have a post-falls assessment that looks at what are the causes behind the fall, what do we think triggered the event, and then what kinds of interventions can we put in place to prevent future falls. We've done resident education. We've created a list of assistive devices that are picture form and gives all staff the opportunity to be able to order that and get them in place. We have just instituted this fall. It's called a Falling Star program. It creates awareness of residents at high risk to fall, and those residents have a star, a red, white, and blue star put on the wall in their room. If they have an assisted device such as a walker or wheelchair, a star is attached to that, and then outside of their room where their name is, there's a little star there to identify for everybody to be alert that this resident has a high risk of fall. And some of these things have led to a decreased rate of fall. We do a facility rate of fall, which rates the number of falls per 1,000 resident days. In January, our rate was 7.8, and now in December, it's down to 5.6. So we're very pleased with that. With this focus on falls, one of the things that's interesting then is the incidence of new fractures. And our Minneapolis rate is 0.85, where our peer veterans rate is 1.5, and the national community rate is 1.4. So although we may be having a few higher rates of falls, our rate of fractures is less, and the rate of injury is no injury is less. Another project, just to give you an idea of some of the things that we're working on, is pressure ulcer prevention. From the minimum data set, then we can break residents down into categories of high-risk residents with pressure ulcers and low-risk residents with pressure ulcers. High-risk residents would be those individuals that, of course, that can't turn and reposition themselves at all, need assistance basically with all the activities of daily living skills. Our pressure ulcer rate at Minneapolis is 4.4. Our peer veterans rate is 13.1, and our national rate is 18.2. Again, using the staff education, we've used both internal sources for education and external sources for education, conducting skills fair group training and one-to-one training. We've had a wound care specialist review our protocols for pressure ulcers, plus give us additional training. Our focuses have been on assessment and documentation, and repositioning and toileting. Our low-risk residents would be those individuals that may need some help getting up, but once they're up, they might be able to get up and going, but maybe in bed, getting out of bed, those kinds of things. And these are the ones we really, truly want to prevent, not that we don't want to prevent all of them. Our facility rate at Minneapolis is 0.65. Our peer veteran rate is 2.5. Our national community rate is 5.95. So we have done a very good job with pressure ulcer prevention, and we strive to get better each and every day. Another area for improvement project, again, just to give you an idea of some of the things that we're doing, focusing on nutrition and hydration. Significant weight loss is determined as 5% in 30 days and 10%, I believe, in 6 months. And so surveyors and even family members, myself, we want to know, well, what's causing this? Why is this happening? And what do you do about it if you discover it? We have created new weight tracking systems. We've done a lot of staff education, again, in skills fairs, groups training, one-to-one, and making sure we have a timely response to significant weight loss. There are many cases in which significant weight loss is unavoidable with the dieting process, for instance, those kinds of things. But what can we do to negate that? It are some of the things that we're looking at, getting our dietitians to consult timely and addressing anything we can do to keep weight loss from happening. That being said, the Minneapolis rate is 4.5, peer veteran rate is 9.3, and the national community rate is 10.4. So we are moving in the right direction with identifying the significant weight loss and then being timely to deal with that. Another offshoot of that, with hydration especially, would be urinary tract infections. If you don't get enough to drink, the system doesn't get flushed, and urinary tract infections can take place. Again, with the staff education and looking into that, making sure fluid is available at any given time for all of the residents, Minneapolis rate is 3.95, the peer veterans rate 8.1, and the national community rate is 11.4. Another thing that we have lined up to do in February, end of February, is a Kaizen event through the Lean Quality Initiative through the governor's office, is to look at our pharmacy. Our pharmacy is moving to a different location, so we thought this was an opportunity to determine, once the order gets to the pharmacy, how can we move it through the workspace better? How can we create a better workflow, cutting down wait time and duplication? And it was an opportunity, since we're moving out of one space to another, to take a look at how we can do things better there. Overall, we are looking at a continuous improvement system. I believe that we do our best today to get better tomorrow. And by doing that, we can create new systems and processes to improve resident outcomes. One of those ways to do that is to automate data collection, put in alerts for the nursing staff where possible, and instead of blaming, continuously using opportunities to educate staff, residents, families, friends, legislators, those kinds of things. Education is a great way to improve processes.
Maybe before you go on,
yep,
if I can just ask a question in regard to weight tracking.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you also track weight gaining? I mean, you know, today, in this society, we have an issue with diabetes, and sometimes people who are diabetics can tend to gain weight and aggravate their conditions.
Madam Chair, yes, we do track weight on a weekly basis for each resident. So the trends, whether it be gain or loss, can be identified quickly, and the dietitian can be consulted, and we can create an individualized plan to address those issues.
Thank you.
Okay, staffing. the vacancies that we currently have in the nursing department, we have a 0.4 FTE for RNs. For LPNs, we have 14.4 FTEs. And for the HSTs, or nursing assistants, we have 15.2 FTEs. And, you know, I'd like to grow some LPNs. And actually, we have encouraged, as one of our retention pieces, have encouraged our nursing assistants to go on and further their education. So we're trying to grow some of our own LPNs. In fact, there's two right now that are in the process of taking their boards so that we can move them into those LPN positions. I'd like to say I have a magic bullet to say, poof, these vacancies will be filled. But according to the Governor's Workforce Development Council report, there's approximately 2,400 RN openings in the state of Minnesota and approximately 1,200 LPN openings in the state of Minnesota, of which we're trying to vie to get people to our facility. Retention and recruitment efforts. We are working to try to get the word out using the people we have in our facilities to, if they know of a good employee, to bring them our way, using advertising, try to connect with the colleges, especially with the LPNs. We are currently in the process of converting some of the LPNs. We're going to try to fill them with trained medication aides where possible to decrease the number of positions of LPNs that are necessary. So those are some of the things that we are doing to address the vacancies. And then the last thing that I just want to share is, you know, resident satisfaction, family satisfaction. How does one measure that? And it's an integral part of everything that we do each and every day. And you received a graph, I believe, that Pinnacle Consulting is a company that is a third-party objective person that calls 10% of our resident family population on a monthly basis, interviewing them on things such as overall quality, how do they rate us, how do they rate the nursing staff, the resident dining experience, the food, cleanliness, individual needs getting addressed, laundry, how do we communicate, how do we respond to resident problems? Do we treat people with dignity? Would they recommend our facility to others out in the community? Activities, physical therapy or rehab therapy? How was the admission process? Is the resident safe? Do they feel safe in the community? And overall, what is our average? And as you look at the particular graph, you can see, well, the purple bar would be our monthly average. The blue bar would be our year-to-date average. And then Pinnacle, the Pinnacle average is the red line across the way. Across the graph there. And the blue line is best in class as established by Pinnacle. The dotted black line is the company average, or that would be Minneapolis. And then the green dotted line is a veterans home comparison. And as you can see, Minneapolis is above best in class in a lot of situations, or kind of trends that a little bit. And Pinnacle average, I think we were down just a little bit for the admissions process.
So
So this demonstrates that I think overall, families and residents who responded to this survey are pleased with what's going on for CARES at the Veterans Home.
Are you ready for questions?
Questions, yes.
Ms. Smith, are you now staffing based on your resident care plans?
Madam Chair, yes, we staff on acuity level. Our minimum data set, or the resident assessment instrument, can be used to calculate a RUGS rate, and which points out the productive hours of care that are necessary for each of the units in our facility, so yes.
And what would be the highest acuity cluster you have in your facility?
Well, I didn't bring that with me, I'm sorry.
Maybe you can get that to me later.
I can.
Then. Your highest and your lowest.
Sure.
I'm very impressed with the improvements you've made in skin care.
Thank you.
I want to congratulate you on that, since that has been one of the longest-standing problems at the Minneapolis facility. And I want to urge you to continue to work on getting those vacancies filled.
Yes, ma'am, I will.
Are there questions? I guess not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, would you like to have us report on just an update on CRIPA, or would you like us to speak to the Medicare, Medicaid?
Why don't we talk about Medicare first?
Yes, ma'am. I also have Mr. Dennis Devereaux, that our legal analyst, that if you would, to present as well.
I'm Dennis Devereaux. I'm the legal analyst for the Minnesota Veterans Homes. And I can give a short presentation on the differences between Medicaid and the rules under which the Minnesota Veterans Home calculate charges. The benefits of the Minnesota Veterans Home are perceived by veterans as a benefit that they have earned through military service to our country. This is a big difference from Medicaid, which is available to everyone based on need and is considered to be welfare or charity. Accordingly, the rules regarding financial options for a veteran going into a Minnesota veteran home are different and more provide more options to the veteran than a person going on Medicaid. For example, the look-back period, that is, how far back assets may be transferred for less than full market value, is different for Medicaid and the Minnesota Veterans Home. Medicaid is currently 60 months, 5 years for trusts, and currently 36 months, gradually moving to 60 months over the next 2 years for all other assets. For the Minnesota Veterans Home, under the Minnesota rules, the look-back period is currently 12 months. That may be transferred to anyone. In regard to the spouse, under Medicaid, a spouse is limited to one half of the joint assets of the couple and a maximum of $109,000. Under the Minnesota Veterans Home rules, assets may be transferred to the spouse or to dependent children up to the day before admission and are unlimited. Likewise, under Medicaid, the Medicaid has the power to make a claim against property and also against an estate. That is, there are certain assets are exempt from being considered currently for Medicaid payments, but when a person passes away, then their estate may be billed for that amount. Minnesota Veterans Homes currently does not have the authority to go back and make a claim against an estate or against property. Lastly, another difference is the personal needs allowance for the individual. Under Medicaid, it's a maximum of $89 per month. Minnesota Veterans Home provides $90 per month plus 5% of the veteran's income. So we do provide an extra amount of personal needs allowance. These are just the basic differences between the systems. Obviously, switching from one to the other, we would reduce the benefits available to a veteran and their family by going on to a Medicaid system. Be happy to take any questions regarding this.
Well, Mr. Devereaux, we have been asking the veterans' homes to look into this because of the need to reduce the financial commitment the state makes to the facilities. And there is no time like the present to have this concern be in the forefront of our minds. Maybe I could just ask a very basic question of the deputy commissioner. Is there something less dignified about paying for your own care if you're a veteran?
Madam Chair, no.
Well, that is what people are asked to do in the state of Minnesota before the state provides for their care, and if they're able. And we also have federal resources that could be brought to bear to help with the financial needs of the veterans' homes if we were to qualify for Medicare and Medicaid. Another advantage would be, of course, that if your homes are certified, we know that the care is meeting a certain standard. I think before anybody starts cutting budgets, we always want to make sure that we're being as fiscally responsible as we can in terms of trying to find every dollar out there that we might not have been able, for some reason in the past, to garner from the federal government. And so this is one area where I think we have not garnered every dollar we could.
Madam Chair, there's a second component to this. We also have are looking at the Medicare certification. What Mr. Devereaux spoke to was the medical assistance or Medicaid component to mm-hmm. that. One of the things that we have done, we're working with a firm, Larson Allen, to look at the feasibility, excuse me, ma'am, feasibility of the homes being certified in a Medicare, Medicaid services. And they provided a report that is attached to the paperwork that you have in front of you. They have put together a process, steps to follow in order to move forward into a Medicare, Medicaid, or a CMS certification process. One of the things that they wanted to look at, first of all, is to make sure that
Let me just interrupt you, Deputy Commissioner. Apparently, we don't have that document, and maybe if you have a copy with you, we could have one of our staff make copies for the members.
I apologize, ma'am.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just a point of clarification and for background. Do other states have relationships with Medicaid and Medicare for with regard to their veterans' homes?
I'm sure they do.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, yes. Other states have veterans' homes that are Medicare and Medicaid certified. However, the rules and the laws in each state are different. So in this case, the rules for the veterans in the state of Minnesota have afforded the veterans a different perspective, as Mr. Devereaux itemized.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I can wait just a few minutes if you like.
Maybe I can just ask you a question while we're waiting to get the documentation. Has the department done a fiscal analysis of what the benefits financially would be to the operation if we were to get certified?
Madam Chair, I do believe that a few years ago, it was my understanding that the Veterans Home Board did conduct an analysis. I understand it was about maybe 10 or so years ago. I have not been able to find that analysis. So part of what the recommendations from this firm is that we will start off with an analysis and then move forward from there.
Well, when would we have that analysis?
Madam Chair, we would have to go through the contracting process first, bid out properly to hire a firm. The firm that we are working with right now was for a very specific finite issue that you have in front of you, just talking about what are the steps and giving a really good game plan to follow.
So what would be your best guess of when we would know?
Thank you.
A couple months at least to get a contract in place and then move along to implement.
Mr. Devereaux is our, as I said, legal analyst. He also works with our contracting process. We anticipate that it will be at least a couple months in order to go through the state contracting process and then to have the firm conduct the analysis. So I would venture to guess about 4 months or so. It would probably, our hopes would be sooner, but we have to walk through the proper process.
So we wouldn't actually know until we're finished with the budget process this year? Is that what you're telling me?
Madam Chair, yes, ma'am.
Well, that is not very, very good news to my ears. You know, we could just put a bill in and then the Department of Finance has to give us a fiscal note on it. Well, we have the documents now if you want to.
So the first page of the document is basically a letter responding to our request. The second page speaks to the recommendations, and where I was speaking to was the second paragraph where the firm recommends first that we determine the approximate financial benefit to the state of Minnesota. And it goes on from there. On the third page is where I want to point out these are just some recommended processes that the firm suggests or recommends for any nursing home that was to get certified in Medicare. Financial benefit of the Medicare and Medicaid service for skilled nursing certification. Determine the opportunities for a resident of the veterans' homes utilize the Medicare Part A, Part B, and Medicare Part D, and medical assistance program. Assess the number of admissions from hospitalizations, or at least 3 days, which is a qualifying stay. In our rules right now, we can bring veterans that are on the waiting list coming from home, not necessarily from a hospital stay, and they would not meet that criteria. Analyze eligibility requirements for each program. Evaluate the applicability of the Minnesota statute, which talks to the moratorium on certification on nursing home beds in the state of Minnesota. Evaluate the statute that talks or speaks to provider surcharge per bed, per facility. Evaluate the applicability of the Minnesota statutes that talk about long-term care consultation services, and also the statute that speaks to conditions for participation. Estimate the cost of each facility becoming Medicare and Medicaid certified, and then a preparation of a financial analysis to determine the estimated financial benefit for the Minnesota Veterans Administration and the veterans' homes that we have. This is exactly what you're asking for, that analysis. And this could be done at the front end, but as I was mentioning, we have to go through the contracting process and bid out an appropriate consultant to do this. We have to complete revisions, if any, of any of the statutes, such as our Minnesota rules, Chapter 9050, that speak to our rules and in medical assistance in particular, or any other statutes that Mr. Devereaux just spoke to. And then complete individual facility assessments to determine compliance on the following areas: required nursing services, specialized rehabilitation, medically related social services, pharmaceutical services, diet services, activities, residence rights, admission transfers and discharge, residence behavior and facility practices, quality of life, resident assessments with the minimum data set, plan of care, physician services, dental services, services for mental illness, physical environment, administration, state and federal surveys, and technology needs such as medical records or any billing software that would be needed. Then we would need to develop a plan to include the timelines as to when we would be able to do these various things, such as staffing levels, personnel training, and education related. Since the homes have not been certified, the staff has not been operating under CMS rules and regulations, so we would have to bring them up to speed on conditions of participation, documentation, completion of minimum data sets correctly, Medicare Part A, Part B coverage eligibility guidelines, managed care plans, Medicare, Medicaid billing procedures, and any other necessary training that would be needed. And then we would have to go through and ensure that we are ready for the initial survey and future surveys from the Department of Health.
At this time, are residents that come into your facilities on Medicare Part D?
I know that in the Fergus Falls Veterans Home, we are working very diligently to use Medicare Part D as a way to subsidize the cost of the medications. At the Minneapolis home, I don't know the answer. I can get the answer back to you, ma'am. But I know that at Fergus Falls, we have just recently started, and we're moving in that direction.
Because a resident can be part of Medicare Part D without certifying the home.
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, and that's a perfect example of what Fergus Falls is doing. Fergus Falls is not certified as a Medicare facility, but they are looking at the Medicare Part D for the pharmaceuticals for their residents.
Well, again, I can only urge you to be looking as quickly as possible.
Yes, ma'am. As I said, Madam Chair, we're going to move through the steps. We will move through it as quickly as possible just so that what I don't want to do is set up a situation where we're moving so fast that we miss a step, and then we'll be right back here explaining a legislative auditor's report that we didn't follow the proper steps for contracting. So we just want to make sure that we follow the proper steps.
I understand that. I also understand that we're in a position financially in the state right now where we can either maximize our resources or we can do with less. And so, you know, my first choice always is to maximize resources. And I realize, you know, that there are a lot of challenges for you all in trying to look at this, but the times require it. Times require it.
Yes, ma'am.
So let's just say in a perfect world, since we've established the fact that we're not living in a perfect world, that's for sure. In a perfect world, if you were letting this contract out and going through all the steps and determined that it was advantageous to become Medicare certified, and you were going to do that, what would the timeline be for that in your mind?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in a perfect world, I would set up a process where I would start with the smaller homes. I would probably start with Laverne, Fergus Falls, and Silver Bay, get them implemented very quickly, get them billing, and start that process. Minneapolis, with the systems that we're still trying to put in place, it would be an overwhelming task. So I would say that in a perfect world, with a consultant in place, I would say that we would probably be within 6 months at those homes involved in a Medicare. Of course, it would depend on a number of statutory things that we would have to...
6 months from today?
If in a perfect world, as you said, ma'am. And that would mean that all of the rules would have to be changed, certain laws would have to be changed, and that the Department of Health is ready to certify us and that we meet that requirement. So if it was a perfect world that we can move along very quickly and change every single thing that needed to be changed, I would say the smaller facilities in about 6 months or so.
And you mentioned Minneapolis is still putting systems in place. I guess in my own mind, it would seem to me that if you're putting systems in place and you're going to need certain systems to be in the Medicare arena, that it doesn't make sense to put a system in and then have to change it, that it'd be better to be putting the system in so that it would meet the Medicare requirements.
Yes, ma'am.
And to do it all at the same time.
Yes, ma'am, Madam Chair. The systems that we are putting in place at Minneapolis do follow the CMS guidelines on the most part. But we're looking at very basic systems, as you heard today, with just our financial systems and with our nursing systems. We want to not overwhelm the system by having them certified right away.
Well, I guess the question is, would it overwhelm the system more getting certified right away, or would it overwhelm the system more having less resources to do a better job?
That's a good question.
Why don't you think about that question and get back to me then?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there other questions? One last question, since I know that you came from California. Were the homes in California certified?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, ma'am.
And would you say that in terms of the financial investment per person that was put into the homes in California, how would it compare to Minnesota?
In the state of California, we had caps. I understand that there's legislation right now to remove the caps on what a resident would pay. An example would be for skilled nursing, a resident would pay $2,500 a month or 70% of their income, whichever was less. There was also a system in place in California that there is a unreimbursed cost of care where the additional cost to care for that veteran will continue to build. And once the veteran passes away, the state will go in as an estate, will go in after the estate to capture that amount that was written into law in the state of California. So it was a little different in that process. Our facility, the one that I operated, operated very well with Medicare, Medicaid guidelines. We were a relatively new facility, so we were only open 2 years when we were certified as a Medicare facility. But we have a veterans home. I should say California has a veterans home in Yountville that is over 120 years old. It's a 1,500-bed facility, and they are Medicare certified, and they follow the same guidelines. But it really is the statutes and the laws that are written depending on whether you can do it quickly or not.
And at the time that the home that you worked at was certified, was there an increase in federal funding that came to the home?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, there was. We also operated, our pharmacy was a retail pharmacy. What I mean by that is that we were able to build third-party payers and Medicare and Part D and various other types of through our pharmacy. So there are different means of capturing reimbursables. Our rehab was not only a inpatient but an outpatient rehab that we were able to bill two different types of rehab services mm-hmm. as well. So overall, the facility was capturing quite a bit of reimbursed dollars, federal dollars, that were coming back into the state of California.
Well, then I'm sure you understand why I'm asking you these questions.
Madam Chair, I do.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, then why don't we move on to the next topic?
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is an update on CRIPA. I was asked to speak to CRIPA, so I'll give the same presentation that I gave in October with a couple exceptions. We have an actual date now when the CRIPA team will be coming to the facility. July 2008, a letter was written to the governor. The letter stated that the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division will be conducting an investigation of the Minnesota Veterans Home at Minneapolis, authority under the Civil Rights for Institutionalized Persons Act. The investigation will focus on health care services, including medical and nursing care services, whether residents are safe from abuse or other harm, whether residents are served in a most integrated setting appropriate for their needs. Department of Justice has not reached any conclusions about the subject matter of the investigation. Department of Justice believes that the state wants to operate the Minnesota Veterans Homes consistent with the requirements of the Constitution and federal law. During the course of the Department of Justice investigation, they will consider all relevant information, particularly the efforts that the state has taken to ensure compliance with federal law. They will also offer or provide recommendations and ways that we can improve the conditions of the facility when appropriate. Department of Justice states, provided that the state cooperates fully with the investigation, if they conclude that there are not systematic violations of the constitutional rights or other federal rights, they will notify the governor that they will be closing the investigation. Department of Justice also states that if they conclude that there are such violations, they will provide detailed written findings and identify a minimum measure that they believe are necessary to remedy the violation. This includes identifying any financial, technical, or other assistance the United States Department can or may provide assistance to. Department of Justice has requested copies of several documents to be sent prior to their visit. Due to the Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act, We are not able to send them the personal identifiable information that they requested, but we did send copies of redacted information. The CRIPA visit was scheduled for September 29, 2008, but was postponed until the Department of Justice has reviewed our position on the Minnesota Governmental Data Practices Act. On November 20, 2008, two members from the CRIPA team conducted a preliminary visit at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. We are working with the Attorney General's Office and the Governor's Office with regards to the CRIPA investigation. We're also cooperating with the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to the extent of the law. When they came out to visit, they understood the position on the Governmental Data Practices Act. They were hoping that there were ways that we can work around that, and obviously there isn't. And what we've done is not only have we redacted the information, provided them the information that has been redacted, but we've also sent out release of information to all the family members and let the family members know that this investigation is due to come to the facility. They would like to look at all of the aspects of care in the facility, and if they can provide a release of information so that they can look at their loved one in case there is a concern for them. That the first time we sent out a release of information, we didn't get a good response with the return on the release of information. We've just recently sent it out again. This time we sent it out with the billing, the bills that go out to the family members. We've also used the family council to speak to the family members. We've held town halls with the family members explaining and urging that they do sign the release of information that's not going to hurt anything if they would like. And so we've made every measure possible to try to get the word out to have the family member sign the release of information.
Is the Department of Justice investigation looking at current time periods, or are they looking at past time periods?
They go back, and Madam Chair, members of the committee, they go back and they look 2 years, a two-year time frame, but they can go back further. The issues that may have happened in 2005, they want to see that systems that we have in place now. So they are looking at our current processes.
They're looking at both.
Yes, ma'am. They want to make sure that if there was an issue that happened 2 years ago, what systems that you put in place, what measures that you put in place to prevent this from happening again in the future. So they're looking at both past and present.
So probably one of the most important things is to get release signed from family members of deceased veterans mm-hmm. who were cared for at the facility.
We've provided all of the release of death charts. We've redacted the information, gave them all of the information they requested on the death charts, and we are actively trying to get all of the releases at this time. We as a department have briefed the governor's office, legislative chairs and committee members, advisory council, staff, residents, family members, and the veterans community about the arrival of the CRIPA investigation. The CRIPA team is scheduled to arrive at the Minneapolis home the first week of February. They are scheduled to arrive on the 3rd, February 3rd. They've notified us that that's when they will be here, and they plan on exiting on the 6th of February, unless they find something different that they may need to stay longer or leave sooner. The team will consist of 5 members. It is anticipated that they will be at the Veterans Home for about 4 to 5 days. The team members, the initial team, had attorneys that came out. They toured the facility, made some very favorable comments about the appearance of the facility in the tour. But the next team that's coming will be doctors, nurses, social workers, healthcare professionals, and we will consider this as a regular survey, just like the Department of Health would coming into a facility. And that is my update, Madam Chair, if you have any questions.
I think the other thing that you didn't mention, which was enlightening to me when I heard it, is that the Department of Justice is not in a position to levy monetary fines. Do you want to just explain that?
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I apologize for the oversight. In October, when the committee asked the question and Madam Chair asked the question, what would be the financial implication of a fine, we went back and checked with the Department of Justice. They said that their intent is to have us comply. So they would make recommendations, and we would have to comply in a timely fashion. If we don't comply, then what would happen is that the Department of Justice will seek a lawsuit against the state of Minnesota to have us comply, an injunction per se. So it would not be a monetary fine, but what it would be a lawsuit stating that we would have to comply with their recommendations.
So the worst thing that could happen would be that the facility would be under court order.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any questions on this issue? Okay, if guess not. Any other questions on any of the items that we brought up today? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a final comment. I think one thing that's been, I feel like, has been noticeably absent from our discussion today is we need to remember that really the reason that we're having the discussions here is because of our concern for the veterans and our concern for the families of those veterans. And sometimes I think in our discussions we lose sight of that. But I also think, as the chair has pointed out, we are presented perhaps with an opportunity that we haven't been presented with before. Certainly we've had numerous opportunities to hear about the developments at the Minneapolis home in particular, but in lieu of our budget situation and the difficult decisions and discussions that are most certainly going to happen, I hope that this committee takes a very strong, hard look at this home. It is broke financially. It is broke in terms of patient care, and it has been broke. And so I hope that we remember the discussions that have transpired, and I hope that in the end we are able to move forward in ways that are difficult to discuss, but I think that the time couldn't be more perfect.
Any other questions or comments? Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, thank you for your comments. I would just like to point out, you say that it is broke. I think it has been very broken, and there is a great deal of progress that has been made in the past year from a lot of people who are new to our system, who were not involved in the issues from before. So I would ask that you consider saying it has been broken and it's working its way back. I would just like to state that for the record.
Well, we wish you the best of success with your continued efforts.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, the meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you very much for your attention.